You can do it. The time is now. Let's get to it. Just believe. Just believe. Just believe.
In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents the authentically entertaining voice of truth and inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with the always unforgettable, ever insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys. As we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live, always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. Good for all and all for good. And now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
This is Filippo Voltaggio, and our guest tonight is Dr. Dario Nardi. For someone who doesn't like titles, you didn't know I was going to do that to you. He is a recognized personality expert, an author, a trainer, and a speaker around the world. And as an award-winning instructor at UCLA, Dr. Dario Nardi, I won't do that the whole show. Dr. Dario Nardi has taught computing, honors, and human complex systems. As a matter of fact, for the past 7 years, he has conducted research into the connection between personality and brain activity patterns using EEG technology. He outlines a lot of this in his books, including Neuroscience of Personality, 8 Keys to Self-Leadership, and many others. He also has designed the iPhone apps Love Therapy for Couples and Personality Types to help people apply personality knowledge for personal development. He is also the founder of Radiance House. I have to say, I've known Dario for, if not 20 years, maybe actually, I think over 20 years. And I met Dario through my singing career. And so because I met Dario through my singing career, I have known him for 20 years. What I'm trying to get with this is that I would see Dario almost every year, at least once or twice, and we would have fascinating, fascinating conversations about the brain and about psychology and personality and all the things that he was doing, that he was learning while he was doing them, first studying them and then actually implementing them, then teaching them and then doing studies and writing his books. And I was learning all about this every time I would see him. I would ask him because I would be fascinated and I would be interested. It never once occurred to me to have Dario Nardi on the show about life changes. Why? Probably because I met him when I was only a singer and not a host of Life Changes with Filippo. And as I was putting this together, when I it finally dawned on me like this great aha, why have we not, in all these years that we've been doing Life Changes for 5 or so years, had my friend Dario Nardi on the show? It occurred to me, this is exactly what he's been talking about all this time, is that we get into patterns. We put people in boxes in our brain and we don't see ourselves out of it and don't see any different. Here it is, quote unquote, the master of change sees Dario as, oh, I'm the singer and Dario's the professor at UCLA. And so every time I see him, we talk about fascinating things. Hello. This is the kind of thing we talk about on Life Changes. So and here it is, this very concept that he has come to study so well and is an expert in throughout the world as a speaker and as a trainer and as a teacher. here it is, personified in this in this fine example of myself. So with that, I am happy to say that I have broken out of that. And now I have to wonder what else I might need to break out of that's right in front of me that I'm not seeing because I put it in a box many years ago before. And since then, I've become something entirely different. And that may no longer apply the way I'm looking at it. So today, in this conversation, we're all going to have an opportunity to look at ourselves differently, to look at the relationship between our brain and our life and the way we think and the kind of boxes or systems we put ourselves in or people in, whether we know it or not, in a great conversation with Dario Nardi, PhD. I'm going to stop. when we come back right after this.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
This is Filippo, and our guest today is teaches at UCLA, that is University of California, Los Angeles, and is the founder of Radiance House. That's a media distribution company, and he's a friend. Dario Nardi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a delight to be here after many years of potential having met. And I have to say, I'm really happy to have known you as a singer. And I suspect my aunt and uncle and the rest of my family don't know what a bargain they were getting every Christmas Eve.
Oh, that's yes. Really sweet. Thank you. I love your whole family, actually, that I've come to know over all these years. And did you ever wonder why you weren't on the show?
No,
because you thought of me as a singer.
Yes, I really primarily did. In fact, that you did a radio show was rather recent news for me.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. That we probably never even talked about it. So, isn't this a perfect intro to what we're talking about?
Absolutely, because everything we do every day many times is reinforcing the habits. And I don't just mean once or twice a day. Every 2 seconds, every 5 seconds, every minute, we're activating circuits in the brain that we've built up that are habits. And those are that's a lot of reinforcement in just one day.
We're not talking about just good habits.
That's right. That's right. No matter what kind of habit it is. And that's the way we perceive, how we link things together, the associations we have, what we don't pay attention to, what we feel, what we don't feel. A whole variety of things.
You know, actually, I'd like to start with the what we don't pay attention to, because to me, that was one of the things that first fascinated me. And actually, you were talking about having me come in as a singer to be one of the test subjects. And,
yes,
and we never
yes.
were
well,
able
Well, you're still invited to do that. We'll discover what habits you have.
Oh, yeah. Great. Great. Look forward to that. And at first in the conversation, it was as a singer, you wanted me to come in with some of my favorite songs and just sing them to you. And then you wanted to study my brain. What was it that you were going to find by way of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly last year, I brought in about a half dozen people who were musicians in their 30s and 40s. And just to look at what goes on in their brain as they do their music, whatever that might be, from music professor, music expert, somebody who plays every single day, has no musical training, whatever it is. Really looking at one of these things is the state of flow. So when is it that a musician and myself, having played music a number of years ago, a little bit, you know, publicly, when is it that we get into the zone? We hear about the zone in athletics, too. What is that? In our everyday work lives, we may get into the zone somehow. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And wanting to know what that looks like. And I often find it's a combination of expertise that's there, we're doing what we're really good at, and we need to be improvising at the same time. Mm. So we're not just sort of mindlessly repeating steps. Mm. That, you know, sort of like how we might drive in the morning or something on our route every day for 20 years, not noticing it. No, not that.
That's not the zone.
That's not the zone.
That's something else. Similar. I mean, it sounds similar.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Zoned
absolutely.
Out.
That's zoned out. Absolutely.
But completely different.
Absolutely. And the in and out. So zoned out is really in many ways the opposite of in the zone. When somebody's zoned out, there may not be any brain activity really at all. In fact, that's what we get when we watch TV most of the time. Is just no higher cognitive function at all in the brain, which after a long day actually is understandable for adults. But if, for those of you listening who have kids, think twice when you put them in front of the TV because no brain activity. But for
I saw a Google talk that you did that. As soon as you said that, it's like, whoa, like zero. I mean, everything
It really can be zero, especially when they're by themselves.
Wow.
And so really we can get into the zone in a positive way when, of course, we've built up this expertise for something. So there was a guy who came in. He's in his mid-20s. He has a shtick where the audience gives him two words, like canoe and elephant. And he's got a few seconds to mull those over. And then he has to compose a song and a set of lyrics extemporaneously that go with those words given by the audience. And, of course, something like canoe and elephant's going to be a really funny piece, right? Or in something canoe and moon, well, that would be very romantic. And he all makes it up as he goes along. And what we see on the brain monitor is somebody who's alert and awake, but also relaxed at the same time. And you think like, well, but they're being extemporaneous. Mm. They're composing. It's like, yes, they are. But they're really good at what they do. Mm. So they're actually in this very relaxed state. And people show this not just in the arts, but in a whole variety of things. It's really a lot. It's very individual. It's really... We would have to sort of bring somebody in. We can make some guesses, but to bring somebody in to discover what does it.
You know, before we go on, for those who don't know your work, I have to say that you're actually using EEG, electroencephalograph?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And then you put this stuff on these electrodes on their brain, on their head, right? And then you're asking them questions, you're having them do things and all that. So you're monitoring all this stuff and actually seeing something happen on a screen, and that's what you're describing.
That's right. What I see on the screen is in real time. And my favorite moment, by the way, as we're putting the cap on, which looks a lot like one of those nylon caps you might wear to go swimming to keep your hair dry or something.
Okay.
Or like a Santa elf cap. And it has all these little electrodes in it, and I bring out a syringe. And that's a great moment because people always feel freaked out a little bit. And then I show them the syringe is actually blunt, and it's just there to put in some gel in their hair to make sure there's a good connection with the scalp, which is what we're picking up, what goes on right on the surface of the brain. But yeah, it shows in real time, every quarter of a second, the screen is updating and shows in all the different regions of the surface of the brain, the neocortex. And of course, all of that's recorded, and we can also analyze it later.
And so what's happening as you're asking questions or having them do a particular task, you're seeing colors and areas of the brain light up, and that means there's activity happening there, right?
Absolutely. So we're looking for both the amount of activity and the nature of the activity. Sort of say when you go to the beach, you can have big waves or you can have small waves. That's the amount of activity. Or sort of, it seems like both big waves, yeah? But they can also be big but slowly coming in. Or it can be big, like in a hurricane, and they're coming real quickly. The same, you can have small little waves that are very gentle, or you can have small little waves that come in a million a second. So there really is a lot of complexity in the data in terms of color, in terms of the amount of activity, and looking to see which regions synchronize with each other to know that they're working together. Some people's brains actually work by not working together. Mm. So they might seem very scattered sometimes, but they're sort of like a Christmas tree with all the lights flashing on and off. But that's their style of thinking. Very different from some other folks who go into the state of flow, and it's very sort of concentrated and everything's sort of synchronized together. So there's a huge variety in the ways people's brains respond to just about all the different tasks I give them for an hour or 2 hours.
What I like about this is that it's very scientific. It's laboratory, it's scientific, and yet it's talking about something that also is very emotional and up until now was considered subjective. Like, this is something that a psychologist would study, which can be subjective, you know, tell me about your childhood or whatever. But now you could ask the same question, and then you'd see activity in the brain, and you'd say, ah, this is what they're thinking about, or this is where they're going. Let's talk about that in connection to our emotions when we come back, and what effect our emotions have on what we do or not do or want to do or don't want to do when we come back with our guest Dario Nardi right after this.
Are you like many people who want to make positive changes and improvements in your life and in the world around you? Do you ever feel like there's something holding you back from achieving your true potential? Join Stefan and Shaylee Schifeidel with the Tad James Company, the world's largest NLP, coaching, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy training institute. Get ready for a life-changing experience that will give you the tools to transform your life through positive change and will help you create the future you want now. Their training programs are designed to provide you with the revolutionary knowledge, skills, and techniques necessary to effectively create long-lasting and life-changing effects. Discover more about neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy at www.nlpcoaching.com or call 888-440-4823. That's 888-440-4823. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
This is Filippo, and I'm speaking actually to a fellow Italian-American on top of being a friend, Dario Nardi. And we both have Italian families, and I know I'm going to get in trouble by saying this, but especially a couple weeks ago, we had a family reunion, and I got to see the extended family in action. And having been away from some of these people, having been away from some of these people in such a long time, I remember certain traits about them. And it was interesting when now being who I am and studying what I've studied and knowing what I know, being able to see, oh, they're about to go into that. Oh, the emotion has taken over and this is probably what's going to, and it happened. And people might say to their defense, well, yes, but he did this. And what knowing now what I know now, I would say it's the emotion that took him there. Or what would you say about that, Dario?
Well, I think a natural question on a show called Life Changes is how does this work change me or other people? And probably the biggest benefit to me personally, and just, you know, having more knowledge is great and so on, is really appreciating the emotional life of the brain. And a lot of times people think, oh, well, you're dealing with the neocortex, that sort of thick outer layer of the brain, and that's about cognition, right? And sure, it is. But actually, emotions are very much involved in that region. They're not just deep in the limbic system or something like that, deeper in the brain. The emotions are all over. To give a very specific example, so I'm pointing here to the left side of my skull behind my ear. Mm-hmm. And for folks who are right-handed, this region is often involved in analyzing facial expressions. So we see expressions of faces on other people, and we might spend a moment thinking, what does that mean? For most people, that happens really quickly. That's less than, you know, a couple seconds at the most. What's an emotional reaction that we often feel when we see an expression that's a frown of disapproval, that's one we can't read at all? Maybe we feel embarrassment at that frown. Maybe we feel curiosity wondering what somebody else is thinking if it's sort of inscrutable. Maybe we feel pleased if it's a positive response.
Mm.
So that act of perception and then cognition, noticing there's a facial expression, analyzing that expression cognitively, having an emotional response that comes with it, that in fact the brain is just studded all over with regions that are like that, that involve the perception, behavior, cognition, emotion, and they all come together. And it really serves, you know, I would say it's an evolutionary purpose, that when we see, you know, negative facial expressions, the whole idea is we want to get along socially. Mm-hmm. So there's an emotion that's sort of broadcasting and say, hey, you know, you're feeling embarrassed. This means maybe you want to do something in order to get a more positive response from mm-hmm. people around you. Whether we actually do something to get a positive response, that's a little bit more of what I'd say is executive action. We've got to decide about that. And all over the brain, things about like hostility, paranoia, worry and relief, happiness, sadness, empathy, sympathy, all of these things actually have very specific, you know, sort of regions of the brain that get involved with these emotions. And, you know, I really began to appreciate if people prefer to use particular regions of the brain, they have pathways that connect one part with another, these networks that are stronger in some people than in others, where we spend our time. That's not just about how we think about things. That's also about our emotional habits as well.
Mm.
That there are people who have a tendency to be embarrassed easily. There are some people right. who are almost never embarrassed.
Right.
And a lot of it has to do with, it's not just like an emotional switch, that are they even noticing social feedback in the first place?
And almost anything will embarrass them, and other people will wonder, what's up with that? What's
yeah,
up
exactly.
With
oh, I didn't even notice that somebody gave me a frown, so why would they be embarrassed? Or they did, but they don't care, whatever it is. Right. So it's, and the same. So the people have these circuits of responses, and it really made me appreciate in myself and in the people around me that there are these habitual pathways, and they
right.
come with emotions along with them. And that's just sort of, that's the way that they've become. And that's not to exclude change, which we'll talk about, but that's,
we need to yeah. talk about. I'm laughing right now because I'm actually thinking of specific scenarios. Like, did you see how he said hello to me? Like, yeah, he just said hello. No,
yeah.
no, I know what he meant by that.
Yeah. And so, well, and you're bringing in tone of voice too. And this is actually the favorite example I love to bring in. Is this is on the right side, underneath the right ear. And this region is involved in helping us, especially as a singer, you'd appreciate this, hearing melody
uh-huh.
and recalling melodies, moving with melody when you sing, and also voice tone, because voice tone is so much, you know, it can be very melodic, especially if you're an Italian speaker. We know that. Well, voice tone is related to intention. We hear intention. So this part of the brain actually is really involved in detecting other people's intentions. How do we often feel when we detect negative intentions?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very quickly, from just tone of voice, we can become irritated. We can become defensive, whatever it is. And so the part of the brain that helps us manage feelings of hostility is the same part that helps us notice melody and notice tone of voice and intention. And they all sort of are intertwined like several different trees with their roots entangled together. And I call it neighborliness in the brain. And so that's all the time, the responses that we have can connect with each other in just, you know, a few seconds.
And not necessarily is something necessarily implied as negative, but it can be easily inferred by somebody who chooses, who has that overly active part of their brain that infers mm-hmm. things as negative. And is that environment that led them there, or their social upbringing that for some reason that developed, or are they born that way or both?
Well, to paint a specific picture, as a musician, you sort of know there's a difference between a musician's ear and just every, you know, everyday person who
right.
listens to some piece that they like.
True.
Because you say you're going to listen to it in a technical way.
Right.
So I think there's some people who really become very good at listening to, say, voice tone or noticing facial expressions, whatever, in a very technical way. They're a connoisseur of intention.
Mm-hmm.
So when they notice something that might be true, and it might spoil the enjoyment for everybody else, because just because it's true doesn't mean it's important. Or just because they have that level of precision doesn't mean that has some real meaning in the real world. It might, if you're a therapist and you notice just that tiny change in the person's tone of voice when they say one word, you're like, wow, that one word and that one tone of voice could be a doorway to all of these issues they haven't mentioned. So beautiful gift. Now, where that comes from, I'm of the school of thought, and I certainly see this when I've looked at people of all ages now. My original book in my first 5 years, I just looked at college students, which is an interesting group, but it doesn't hardly paint the whole picture. I'd say half of it is career, because the time you look at people in their 40s and their 50s and afterward, you see the signs of their career all over the place. And it's not just career. It could be hobbies. If there are hobbies you do, you know, most days, even if you don't get paid for it, whatever it is going to show up in the brain. So I do believe our habits play a big role. Our upbringing, of course, plays a role. How people do mathematics, what kind of culture they live in. I see with Japanese people I've had, and in fact, that's one of the sort of subgroups I've looked at, ethnic groups, is they're very attentive to the visual aesthetics. That part of the brain over here on the right hemisphere of the visual part, often very well connected to the rest of the brain. And it makes sense if you've been to Japan and you know Japanese culture, the visual aesthetics are very important. They must, I mean, they're not born that way, I don't think. I think that it really is, it's like a cultural thing. And yet at the same time, I'm going to say there's always that other 50% that's, it's our impulses, our tendencies. They're not deterministic, but they really do, their inclinations, personality. Any mother can tell you in the first few weeks, if at least the first few months, this is the kid's temperament and so on.
Yes.
And maybe in the teen years that starts to change or something like that, but that's there as well. So I'd say it's half nature, half nurture, and I'm pretty comfortable with that.
Wow. You know, I said earlier that I liked that this was scientific, and extremely so at that. And yet at the same time, it deals with things that are so subjective. And I've heard you use a term that is used in the quote-unquote new age and spiritual realms, and that is out of body. And I really thought it was fascinating when you were using it, when you were saying people are often out of their body and getting into their body is important. And then you said that sometimes people are too in their body. So could you tell me what you mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. I really had a wonderful opportunity this past February, a therapeutic coach. She's in her 60s now, so she'd been doing her work for at least 30 years, I know that, brought in six of her clients over the course of a week. Well, we had one person come a little bit later. And she did 50-minute sessions with them, and they were hooked up to the EEG, so we could see the brain activity, and I would signal her sometimes, and we'd discuss afterward and so on. We even discuss with the clients as well to make it meaningful for them. Her technique is to really teach people new habits, to help them discover a new habit, anchor that habit, and practice it on their own every day. And I really believe correctly that you got to have your whole self involved. So when you teach somebody a habit, it's about the words that you say to yourself. It's about how you're breathing. It's about how you walk, your physical posturing. It's what you visualize in your mind. It's how you feel. It's all of those things are together. So if you want to teach a habit, it's not just like, oh, you're going to say a nice thought to yourself or you're going to visualize something pretty for 1 minute. It's got to be a habit that you're going to repeat and you're going to inculcate there. And we really saw very quickly that her style of trying to get people into their body, that actually that succeeded in the 15-minute time period that she had. But sometimes it took 45 minutes to get them there for some people. And then for other people, she really had sort of two kinds of clients. Ones who didn't want to get into their body, and then ones who sort of like, oh, they're there in 2 minutes. And then the trick is, in that 2 minutes, they're very much anchored into their whole body and everything into a certain way of being now. And then to teach them a new habit is actually a challenge, because then you sort of want to get them out of their body, out of their habit, to consider options and ways things could be different before anchoring them back into something new.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating. Thank you for explaining that, actually. Habits. We're going to be talking about habits when we come back. What to do with them. what works, what doesn't work, how to change them, how to ground them, how to get in our body with them. and out of our body with others, I hope. Dario has referenced his books, and as did I at the beginning of the show. So if you're interested in any of his work and his books, you could go to radiancehouse.com. What a great name. Radiancehouse.com, just as it sounds. We'll be right back on Life Changes with Filippo with our guest, Dario Nardi.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We're back. This is Filippo, and our guest is Dario Nardi. We talked about him being the founder of Radiance House, and he is also a teacher at UCLA. If you want to know more about his work and, of course, his books, you can go to radiancehouse.com. That's radiancehouse.com. Dario, let me ask you this. The Google talk that I saw and a couple other things, do we just have to Google your name or is that on a website somewhere?
I think that probably the easiest way to find it is to go to the Google search engine and type in Google itself, the name. And my name, Dario Nardi, and that video will pop up, and there are some other videos as well. That said, being a researcher, I'm always mortified because I'm thinking, boy, that video is 3 years old now, and so much has happened since then, and that's just the way it is. And,
of course, being mortified is a choice, right, or is a pattern, right?
It's at least a selection of words. I can say that.
Okay, good. Okay, so... hopefully you don't have a habit around this section of those words, but let's talk about habits that people might have, what they are, how we change them, get in and out of our bodies about them. Let's talk about habits.
Yeah, absolutely. Habits are essentially the behaviors that we have repeated so many times. We've burned these neural pathways into our brain. And after somebody does a session with me, I take all that data and I feed it into a computer program, and it does this analysis, which basically takes like a bird's eye view of the brain, and it shows where all the strongest linkages are, the parts of the brain that are working together every second, every 2 seconds, whatever it is. The older you are, probably the slower that number is going to be. And of course, you know, talking about lots of different possible connections. So what are all those things? Some people naturally then will be a little bit more visual. Some other people will be a little bit more auditory. The way we reason, how we interact with people, all of that will show up in some way. And that's sort of a record of how they've developed and used their brain over many, many years. The question, of course, people always want to know is, can I change? And my first question would be, like, change for what? You know, so you sort of pick some desired outcome or some goal, something like that. Is it a good, you know, ecological goal? Is it an ethical goal? All of those things I think that psychologists are concerned about. And I want to say I'm not a psychologist. I just do research. But I've had the pleasure in the past year of working with a psychiatrist, the therapeutic coach, a couple of psychologist coaches in Europe, a variety of people to see what they do as their, not only from the patient's perspective, what's going on in the client's mind, but what's going on in their mind as they do something. And really trying to get a handle on, do these different techniques that people use work? You know, there's a huge toolbox of therapeutic techniques out there, and what are they? So I described one in the last segment that maybe took 40 or 50 minutes, but her goal is to give the person something that they can repeat the next day and the day afterward and so on their own. Mm-hmm. And it's also very good for that. When I was in Prague, the end of last year, it was really fascinating to watch as the coaches there, particularly the senior coach who has years of experience, being able to really get somebody in a particular sort of pattern of brain activity out of their normal pattern into something different within just a minute or two. And then by selecting a different technique 5 minutes later, says, okay, now let's do a different activity. And he gets them up and says things and, you know, does all the stuff that I don't really quite know what he's doing, but you know, he does his thing. And the person's brain activity shifts yet again. And so the really is fascinating. And that part of that, the lesson was trust matters. Mm. So we saw that compared to somebody else. So, okay, this guy shifted, this client, really quickly. It's because he already has an established relationship. Mm-hmm. He was very willing to go and change, trusting that this person was going to take him in a good direction. Different from somebody who comes in as a newbie, who's maybe defensive about their, you know, particular issue, doesn't even know what their issue is, whatever those things are. So all of the sort of lessons I think that psychologists have learned. And I think naturally it does come to the point where some techniques work better for some people than for others. Mm. And in building change, I think as long as the techniques, whatever they are congruent with how the brain works, they're going to work. So multimodal, multisensory stuff. I mean, if you want to involve the parts of the brain in movement and learning. We just learned this past August, there was this great publication saying the hippocampus is not the only seat for memory. If you want something to go from short-term little lesson you've heard from somebody to long-term, it's got to pass through the parts of the brain involved with physical movement.
Wow.
So no wonder if we have kids sitting in a classroom, not moving, not doing stuff, they're really slow to learn. Year after year, they're exposed to the same things. And very different than, say, some techniques that are very kinesthetic in nature that involve people moving stuff and whatever it is. So the more multisensory, the better. And all the research on habit building suggests you don't even have to succeed at your goal every day. As long as you make an effort, as long as you think, feel, visualize a certain direction, you're at least slowly moving towards your goal. And it might take, well, really good news, it might take 3 weeks. For a lot of things, it could take 3 months. Of course, the magic is said about those 10,000 hours or 10 years, what it takes to become an expert. I don't know definitively about that. I don't do that data directly, but I certainly can say if you want your brain wired a different way, you can tap into some of the things that are sort of, as I say, they're not your strong points, but they're right below the surface. They're sort of like that second standard deviation, as we'd say in statistics. You can go there and you can work on those. They're already there. You just got to practice them more to get better at them. So it's like, I play guitar, I play okay. If I wanted to get better, I really could, you know, I could go there. I just got to do it. I got to put in the time. Mm-hmm. For some types of change, though, we look at the brain, I look at the person's brain circuits, and I'm like, wow, that region fires like once every 10 minutes, which is actually really slow for the brain. If a person wants those two regions connected, it's like, we got a long way to go. Mm. It's sort of like saying, Dario, you want to be a basketball player? You've got a long way to go to do that. So yes, the brain is, quote, plastic. We can change it through habit building. But I do think it's both the multisensory and targeting the things that are within the time frame we can actually.
So that's like when people say, or mothers, like you mentioned earlier, within a certain amount of time, they could say that one's the athletic one and that one's the musician, or that one's the, because they see that their brain or their body, it works in sync for that particular activity almost naturally or naturally.
Well, and that's the word you've used, is it's in sync. And I really believe that, you know, there's all these definitions of intelligence. I believe intelligence is the ability to coordinate. To coordinate with other people, to coordinate within yourself, whatever it is. When you see somebody who's an amazing dancer, you say they're really coordinated. Mm-hmm. They coordinate with their dancing partner, with the environment, with the floor, with the props. Of course, their own body is beautifully, the arms and the legs. The same when you deal with mathematics or music. It's about coordinating all of these different things into something that's composed. It's beautiful. And the good news about kids is kids' brains are really plastic, so that they're ready to go in this direction or that direction, and for better or for worse. You know, I had somebody recently, and before he came into the lab, I sort of misgauged what I thought his personality was. Now, he had taken a pencil paper assessment, and the assessment had said one thing, and I thought, oh, that's probably the assessment's wrong. You know, Dario, I've been doing this 20 years, so I would be right. And I put him in the machine. It turns out I'm the one who was wrong. The pencil paper thing was actually correct. The kid knew himself pretty well. But the reason I was misled is because he had this one behavior in there which was really, really strong, which was totally at odds with what usually goes with somebody like him in terms of personality. And so we got into this interesting conversation about where this came from. Is for him, it was always anticipating all the time. How are people going to react? What's going to come next? Well, he grew up in an abusive home with an alcoholic as one of his parents. And so all the time as a child, he was second-guessing, what's going to happen? How can I anticipate what's going to happen next so I can avoid physical harm?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
And so that is what really was there, is like something that was very incongruent with the rest of his personality. And he had a fair amount of anxiety that also threw me off, because I thought he was going to be a little bit more happy-go-lucky, and it was really that. And then that brings up actually the question of dysfunction. And we all have some dysfunctions, but some people definitely more than others. That's a loaded statement, isn't it?
And now for our next show. We can't go there. Or can we? I mean, we just got a couple more minutes.
I can say very concisely that, generally speaking, we talked about being in your body or not connected to your body. And that involved, but the body, I mean the limbic system, and I mean the gut as well, which also is a whole, you know, place where there's neurotransmitters and we do thinking with our gut. A lot of people, when you present them with positive images and phrases, things like happy baby or a wedding or whatever it is, people, you know, naturally, most people respond in a positive way to those. They actually get connected with their body, especially if it's positive for them personally. Then you present them something like airplane exploding in midair or people burned in ovens, and all of a sudden they have these very negative responses. They go to a disassociated state, this problem-solving state where they're disconnected from their body. That's what most people do. But there are some people I've seen who've come in, and these are people brought by the psychiatrist or whatnot, who had the reverse response. You tell them something that would normally elate most people and should elate them, and they actually become disassociated. They feel nothing. And then you present them something negative, like to go back to their childhood time, something bad happened, and they completely get back in that again, and they feel it again as if they're there again, and they're having this whole body response, and they're all of a sudden feeling, you know, upset and jittery and nervous and whatever it is. And so they've somehow, their whole brain has had like a reversed polarity. And that's well beyond my ability to know what to do next. But it's been interesting as a researcher to know that that's something that really is, that's when the person feels out of sync with themselves.
You're going to figure that out, and then we're going to have you back on the show, and then we're going to talk about that. It's extremely important. And it's interesting because I wonder if it's somehow connected to something that I was thinking about when you talked about if you want the kids to learn something, I'm paraphrasing, of course, you have them be kinesthetic, have them move around, et cetera. And I was thinking, you know, the anger part comes with so much an explosion of passion, of energy. And then there, a lot of times, is movement around it, throwing of things, using the body in a violent way and fighting or banging one's fists against the table or whatever it is. And so that is all so anchored within the body, along with the emotion, along with all that firing in the brain. There's a lot going on there.
Absolutely. Many times we try and use our executive regions of the brain to just clamp down and use self-control and willpower, and that's sort of like a dam. And what happens is that we can only shut out, say, criticism. Let's say you hear criticism all day long. You can only shut that out for so long. At some point, the water is going to go over the dam, it's going to break the dam, and you're going to snap. And people have different responses. Not everybody goes from ignoring it to having a you know, hostile response. People have different patterns, but that's a very common one. And many times it is about managing our emotions. We say, yeah, we can handle it. And it's like, sure, you think you can handle it now, but where is it building up to? And as you said also, of course, there can be a whole reservoir of things for many years, these behavioral patterns that are built in, the things that are shut off, whatever it is.
And that takes my thinking to, we need to be careful. I mean, this is a new thought for me. We need to be careful of what we're doing while we're upset, because we're physically, potentially anchoring in that upsetness somewhere in our body because we're physically doing something. So all of that just catapults upon itself. And the next time we might be doing that same physical activity, could be running, could be jogging, we might go to that negative place again, even though one would think the jogging would release something.
Well, I would say yes, certainly, that that every time, say, you allow a child to have a particular behavioral response, that's what the nanny comes in for, right? To help the parents correct their the way they deal with their kids. Because otherwise, the kids keep repeating these behaviors. They see that they work, and they get anchored there in the brain. Those neural pathways get built. And then the kids go out into the bigger world and realize some of those things just don't work at all. And they become, you know, either they get slapped for it, you know, or they suffer some other kind of consequence, you know, to change. But yeah, when we talk about the body, it really is, I mean, body and emotions and the connection with, of course, the outer layers of the brain, that when we do therapy with people, I think it's amazing to sit and watch as a psychiatrist will just have a person sitting still in a chair for 50 minutes and wondering, can that actually do any good? And I think that's it, really, if it's just verbal, if it's just mental, if it's just about reasoning or whatever it is. And of course, you know, a lot of psychologists practicing know this now. You want to bring in the emotions and this and that. But it isn't just about having a good cry, although that might be part of it. It really is about that movement and the getting the body involved and all of that.
And we're back to being in the body and being in sync and aligned with all of that and being present. And
And sometimes when we think we're in our bodies, you know, I saw this when I was working with the therapeutic coach. I'm sitting there giving her signals from behind the computer screen, and the client is saying, oh, yes, I feel in my body, I'm meditating. I'm signaling the therapist, like, no, he isn't. No. And she, with one client, she had to remind him every 10 or 15 seconds.
You're not in your body.
You're not. Well, no, she gave him, you know, it was like, feel your fingers, feel your toes, the things that would help him expand his awareness out to his body in a positive way. And boy, that guy had a challenge getting out of his head. And that's so, you know, I mean, it's just fascinating. Yes, that maybe half of what we think we know about ourselves is right. And I've seen this with, you know, people come in and what's my personality? And maybe half of what ourselves is actually not so right. And wow, it's just the narratives that we tell ourselves. Yeah.
This is fascinating. This is so life changes. I'm so glad that whatever needed to change within my brain to be able to see you in this seat finally happened. And I'm already seeing you in this seat more and more and more because there's so much more to talk about. And I look forward to those conversations. So if you all are interested in, can they connect with you through RadianceHouse.com?
There's a service email. I think if they want to connect with me personally, they can get in touch with me at dnardi@ucla.edu.
Okay.
Or they can go to my Facebook page.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which is just to type in Dario Nardi. There are many Dario Nardis in Italy, but I believe I'm the only one in the United States.
Okay.
And plus, the picture that I have on my Facebook page is the same picture as you've advertised for the show tonight.
Oh, very good. Well, then they can't miss you. Well, with that, I look forward to many more times together on the show and off the show. And potentially, I may take you up on the offer to come in the studio and have you plug in my brain, and we'll see.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe we'll make a show about that.
Yes, that's true. We absolutely can.
All right. Well, with that, I look forward to more conversations and our conversation coming up with our producer, Mark Legere, during our producer's wrap right after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page.
We are back, and this is indeed Life Changes. We are live from Studio NoHo in Hollywood, California, and live with our producer, Mark Legere. You must have gotten a brain full.
I don't know where to start. We could do so many shows. There's so many topics.
We gotta.
And what, each of the topics, not only did he address some things that we could drill down on, but it opens up so many other questions.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure for him too.
I'm sure. That's clear. There's an endless thought pattern going. He brought up some things that made me think of some analogies, and I kept seeing grooves in a record. And how you play the same song unless you have different grooves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of a good analogy for our brains and the neurology. And the more you entrain these patterns, the deeper those grooves are. And, the Grand Canyon wasn't, etched overnight.
Built in a day.
Yes. And the other analogy is the dirt path. And how you see,
well worn
prints for a while until it starts to become well worn, and then it becomes that there's the one area that people travel on.
Yeah,
over a period of time until a new path is carved. So it's kind of these things that really were resonating with me. But it opened up another thought process. It reminded me of a study that IONS did, the Institute of Noetic Science, and uh-huh. I think we've talked about this in the past. And the study was, this is a little bit off topic, but I think it really connects to a lot of the wisdom that he was sharing today. The study was taking close partners, whether it be husband, wife, significant others, brother, sister, etc., and separating them, one in an electromagnetically sealed room and the other off campus somewhere at some distant location. And then the one off campus would be shown emotionally charged photos.
Oh.
So similar to what he was
right.
addressing. And so it was, it was happy baby or auto accident
right.
or flowers or, and going back and forth. But the interesting part of the study was that, of course, you would expect that there'd be a correlation between the connected partners. And yes, they were seeing that the partner in the sealed room would react to the, there would be a correlation with the emotional reaction to the partner's reaction to seeing the photo. So even
right.
though they're not seeing it, they're still getting a reaction. But what they learned is that the reaction started to happen before the photo was viewed.
Huh.
Which takes this into a whole nother area, which I started thinking, okay, so
outside
there's
outside of time and space here.
There's there's obviously everything we've discussed in terms of the brain itself, but then what I kept thinking in my brain while I was listening to this mm-hmm. was that 95% junk DNA
yeah.
that we don't really have a handle on what it is doing mm-hmm. or how it relates. And if we are antennas, and if we are, you know, processing a frequency and this connection to the kind of greater whole or the universal mind, that was kind of the door it opened for me, is wondering, you know, where that starts and stops, and what it is really perceiving beyond what the brain is processing.
Well, I love that you obviously know this stuff, get it, and can talk so eloquently about it. And at the same time, Dario was referencing somebody who was saying, oh, yes, I feel that I'm in my body. And the science, you know, he's looking at it saying, no, he's not.
Right.
And so people are so not connected with their own bodies and what they're actually feeling or not feeling, that to be able for them to be able to grasp what you're saying is like, whoa.
Well, and that,
there's that bridge.
That zoned in and zoned out
thing, yeah,
that we were talking about, right?
That too.
And that's it. That's a big part of it. And anybody that's been in that driving to work and you're zoned out, but yet you make it there perfectly, that's one thing. But any creative moment where you're in the zone, whether it's a sports moment or a music moment, what happens there goes beyond your
right.
conscious programming.
Yeah.
When you truly get there in that heightened state, not zoned out, but zoned in, and
yeah.
things just happen at a faster level, as if the knowledge and or intuition comes from out of body.
Yeah. And he was saying that there were two elements, that it had to be something that was well practiced, that well versed, and it had to be something that they were also doing extemporaneously, spontaneously, like improvisationally. And I never thought about those two elements, because I think about when I've performed, they're there. Obviously, I'm doing a song that I know and that I've rehearsed and performance, but every performance is new. Every performance right. is different. The audience is different. Things happen on stage. The music sounds just a little bit different. Whatever it is, the stage looks different. Whatever.
All the sensory
exactly.
stimulus input that you're getting, that you're having to react to on the fly.
And I never really put those two together. Yeah. And having had that experience, I can't imagine not knowing what that feels like. And I do know what it feels like. And I can't imagine people that go through life not having known that experience. And one of the things that I was trying to establish in the show is that potentially there is that, and Dario said that, you could even have that at work. But we don't necessarily talk about it that way.
Yeah. No, I don't think we pay enough attention to it. Yeah, we don't talk about it that way, and we don't pay
right.
enough attention to it, because people almost like so many magical things get written off as coincidence or
right.
things like that. Then you know, oh, he was in the zone, but then they just leave that. Okay, let's not worry about the zone and go back to life. Wait a minute.
Right.
Shouldn't we be paying more attention to
yeah.
know, how we're relating to this experience?
I have a title of a book, Life in the Zone.
Hmm.
Dario?
Life changes in the zone.
Will we see that at Radiance House soon by Dr. Dario Nardi? Just fascinating stuff. And this can go on and needs to go on. I think this study is, his studies have been extremely important. And I like how people are starting to connect with it now, that he's being asked to speak in so many different kinds of places. So people are starting to see the applications of this beyond maybe where Dario even saw it or where it started. And this is not something to be kept in the lab.
Well, he has a new fan. I'll be watching and listening.
Yes. Well, a realigned fan.
Hmm.
Not just Filippo the singer fan, but Filippo Loss of Life Changes fan. And with that, we move on we will come back renewed after this week with our next guest next week, whose name just totally out of my head.
You're out of the groove.
But with that, I am Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you, as life changes, we're here for you. Creating a new groove, I might add. Well, ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world.